My name is Richard Serrett. I'm the host of The Conspiracy Show, a weekly radio program that airs on AM 740 Zoomer Radio in Toronto, and also a television program that of the same name that airs across Canada on Vision TV. Season 3 of The Conspiracy Show debuts August 11th, 10 p.m. Eastern, and a number of episodes of The Conspiracy Show are also available on Destination America, part of the Discovery Channel. In hours 3 and 4 of the program, Micah Hanks will join us to talk about giants and to help separate fact from fiction. However, Paul Von Ward, who stays with us, also broaches the subject of giants in his essay, We Are the Aliens. And Paul argues that the best known genotype deviation found in Homo sapiens, that's us, in our family tree can be found in the appearance of gigantic skulls and skeletons scattered around the globe. Prior to the discovery of giant fossils now available, he says, the only evidence for giants was in written accounts. They were portrayed as non-human or half-human. So where did these giants come from? Based on his advanced being intervention theory, are we then to assume giants are a result of some sort of alien-human hybridization or alien-assisted genetic mutation program? We'll find out when my conversation with Paul Von Ward continues on Coast to Coast AM. All right, Paul Von Ward, I do want to get to the subject of giants in just a moment. It happens to be one of my favorite topics. But before that, a couple of quick points. I'm wondering, is there another alternative explanation for these anomalous characteristics, the Noah type, the blue eyes, the curly red hair, and particularly the pale skin? I'm wondering, could that be a simple case of albinism?
Well, this is a good question, because the notion of albinism is that, you know, there are very minute mutations that occur by accident. And so what we have discovered, and I think I want to make just a little statement here, that we're looking at the situation today, that is, we have these different genetic features all around the globe, and we also, at the same time, we have these tales from history that talk about these genetic deviations that we've been talking about. And so then we say, all right, what is the best hypothesis to support either the creation, evolution, or intervention? And I think I would like to make the point that we have had so much progress in understanding our genetic processes and how mutations actually happen in terms of, you know, natural processes of environments or diets or that sort of thing. Those theories do not support the narrative. So what supports the narrative is this intervention that we have here. So the giants, for example, cannot be supported by either creation or the evolution concept. It has to have this intervention aspect to understand the history. And so what we have to say today, talking to people who are not involved in the field of genetics, we have to understand that what we're talking about in these differences would require thousands, millions of years to bring about these changes that we've been talking about. So I'm trying to articulate the logic here, that there's no better hypothesis, and the scientific community cannot deny that there has to be some sort of cluster of genes changing very rapidly in a short period of time in a particular series of humans. And the result is that you see this sort of human tree of life with broken branches and with grafting on that tree of life, the grafting done by more advanced beings who already thousands of years ago had the knowledge to do this genetic manipulation. Does that make sense?
Let me just throw this back to you and see if I'm following. So in a nutshell, what we're saying is these mutations, whether we're talking about pale skin, longevity, curly red hair in tribes that wouldn't normally have those characteristics, blue eyes, these types of mutations would take such a long time, and Homo sapiens sapiens haven't been around long enough to account for those mutations unless we bring in the AB intervention theory, which suggests perhaps they kick-started that mutation.
That's perfectly said. You've said it in fewer words than I was attempting with.
But not nearly as eloquently, Mr. Von Ward. Now, let me read an email here, and you may have the same response to this, but let's give it a whirl here. Okay. This comes from Francine. Mr. Serrett, I've heard that red hair and blue eyes are characteristics we humans inherited from Neanderthals, which predated humans by 200,000 years. These attributes are not alien, they are natural. Your thoughts?
Well, we don't really know whether that hypothesis has any basis or not. It could very well be that the material that we have, the genetic material from Neanderthals, we're talking about a very short period of time here, 30,000 to 40,000 years ago, and the interbreeding between Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. That is simply evidence that some of these characteristics existed, you know, during that time period. It doesn't necessarily prove that it came from that stream of the genes that we're experimenting with at this point in time. I think what we have to do is to look at the whole scheme of the genetic groups that we have today and try to go back and determine whether we can identify that this is a cluster set of mutations that happened very quickly. And I don't think that you can say that it came from the Neanderthal and then was intermingled over time, because we have the same kind of clusters of genes in other parts of the planet. So anyhow, I think that we need to talk about that issue, but I don't think the comment in that particular message is any more explanatory than what I have just tried to articulate.
All right. Now, people are lining up to talk with you, Paul. And but before we get to the calls, I want to begin the discussion on giants. And first, I mean, we have, as you point out, anecdotal evidence. We have the biblical literature, of course, is replete with accounts of giants. Amos, Numbers, talking about Nephilim, Philistines, Raphaim, and so on. But does the anthropological, archaeological records and the fossil records, do they support the existence of giants.
Yes, we have so much evidence now about these different groups of giant humans or part humans, and I think Micah has all kinds of evidence that you can talk about later on, but the evidence is in every part of the earth at some time or the other. And once again, if we look back at the fossils that we have, the genes that produce those fossils are not something that has been gradually growing through millions of years or hundreds of thousands of years. Once again, you have this abrupt appearance of these physical characteristics that go along with the narratives that they were not humans and they were in some contact with humans. So what we have here is the same kind of story. We have the physical evidence, and then we have the narratives in these various stories, and both of those are not consistent with the way the genetic processes evolve. And so what we're trying to do in this is to demonstrate that we have to have some sort of intervention. Now, it could be, you can say it's not on a plane of aliens from other parts of the universe. Maybe they are a strange species on planet Earth. But what we have in the history of the human story about these beings is that they did not reside here on Earth. The story is that they came from the skies. We have then the stories about the vehicles that they came in, what we now call UFOs. These were not humans on the planet Earth intermingling with humans here. They came from the skies. In fact, the first words for these beings were devas. That's the Sanskrit term. That is coming from the skies. That's what deva means. You have other words in different parts of the world that have that same concept, that these beings that affected humans were from the skies, not from another part of the planet here.
Right. Getting back to giants and biblical accounts, of course, we have Genesis. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Deuteronomy and Amos and Numbers and so forth, many accounts of giants. But how do you counter the argument, Paul, that at some point men were bigger, humans were bigger, early humans were naturally giants, and we just evolved to a smaller scale?
Well, there's a lot of evidence that it's the opposite of that. For example, in the chapter and the book, I mentioned the work of anthropologist Susan Martinez, who has collected evidence around the globe that we were smaller beings and that the giants were the anomaly. This was not another species. This was just a small number of individuals who show up in the narrative suggesting that these giants were the aliens, that is, They were not part of the general human body types, and so they were either beings who arrived on Earth as giants, or that manipulations by other beings coming down to Earth manipulated the genetic pool on this planet and created these temporary groups of giants. In other words, the giants are not, we don't have a fossil record at this point that shows the long-term trajectory that we have for Homo erectus and Homo sapiens and Homo sapiens sapiens and bringing in the Neanderthals, because the Neanderthals are not very different from the early Homo sapiens. So we have this sort of small human population at an early period in time. Then we have more normal, what we would say today, 5 feet to 6 feet in height. We have that fossil record is pretty clear. And then we have the anomalies of these giants. And these giants were associated with the AB categories of life forms on planet Earth.
All right, let's see if we can squeeze in a quick call before we go to break, and let's begin with the wild card line, and Mike is in West Texas. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. It's a total pleasure. Paul, thank you so much. I had a life-changing event at 1988 with three friends of mine, followed up by a connected experience away from us. My grandfather saw something that I think was tied to that event. And the conventional wisdom, authority figures, you know, that are put out there that have all the answers had no answers. So I began the quest on my own. And what you are putting out tonight, what you've been telling tonight, is completely consistent. And I'm totally there with you. Everything that I've been able to stumble across through all these years. My question actually, tied into what you were talking about, the giants. On the fossil record, if we go back and look, okay, I'm not sure about the numbers. You were given the years of from the Great Thaw and the Ice Age period of time. If our people have always wanted to live by the sea as we do now in most populated areas, the Sydneys, the Londons, the LAs, the New Yorks, Beijing, et cetera, if we have always live close to the sea, then when the thaw happened, wouldn't the oldest of our past and history be underwater? And if that's the case, wouldn't that be where we would find the most accurate of the fossil records, especially the ancient brother races or simultaneous groups of people who were living with us from the very smallest to the largest?
That's a great point, Mike, and we've got about a minute here, Paul, before we go to break. So if you want to respond to Mike in West Texas.
Yes, I think you have a very interesting thought there, because we have a lot of evidence of the higher seas now. We know that we have monuments, artifacts in very deep water off the coast of Japan, India, and many other places off of Africa. So I think you're right there, that we have a very big gap in what evidence that we might find in those seas.
All right, Paul, stay put. We'll be back. More of our conversation on We Are the Aliens. We are talking with Paul Von Ward, whose essay is part of a wonderful anthology called Lost Secrets of the Gods, the latest evidence and revelations on ancient astronauts, precursor cultures, and secret societies. And Paul's essay is entitled We Are the Aliens. Let me just crib a passage here. Fragmented accounts from several cultures, particularly the Sumerians, provide many examples of intervention by more advanced beings with early Homo sapiens. Reports of such ABs, or advanced beings, at this level of intimacy between species are found in many cultures. For instance, Romans believed their tribe's founding father, Romulus, was fathered by Mars with a Vestal Virgin, a chaste priestess in the temple. This impregnation mixed the blood of an AB and female Homo sapiens sapiens. As described previously, a so-called mythical god E reportedly genetically engineered a hybrid race with more primitive humans. Back with more of my conversation with Paul Von Ward and your calls when Coast to Coast AM continues. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you, along with Paul Von Ward on the line from Vienna, Austria this morning. And we are discussing his essay, We Are the Aliens, part of the Lost Secrets of the Gods anthology. Let's dip into the callers once again, and we'll begin with Tony in Detroit. Good morning, Tony. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Long-time listener, over 20 years. Hi, Richard.
Hi there.
Paul, pleasure. My question is, one of my master teachers talked about how there was alien manipulation of our DNA, where we once had 12 strands, now we only have 2 strands.
Interesting. I'd not heard that. From 12 strands to 2 strands. What do you make of that, Paul?
Well, I've heard that same account. I haven't tried to do much research in that area because I don't know what evidence we could produce, you know, to make that comparison. I think this information has come from other dimensional voices speaking to us humans, and I am open to the possibility that we do get information through not only physical advanced beings on Earth, but also other dimensions of consciousness. So this is certainly a possibility. I just don't have much research to talk about it.
Thank you for that, Tony. Paul, what about the contention that what researchers call junk DNA may actually show that alien ETs programmed life on this planet? Junk DNA.
Well, that's a thesis that I think is also very logical, that we have collected over millennia DNA material that could have been developed, you know, through our own process of physical evolution on this planet, but also it could be a reservoir of alien DNA as well. I think we're finding, though, in the research that's going on now, that a lot of that material that we call junk DNA, we now know that it has its own purposes, and we just haven't figured them out at this point in time. I think also it's worth mentioning that the powerful process that we are studying now is the notion of the expression of these DNA, this material that all of us have. It's not what the result is in our body in terms of features and health and all kinds of other conditions of the of human development, that it's not controlled completely by the DNA itself. It is how the DNA is expressed, and we now know that environmental influence has an impact on that, and I would go so far as to say mental initiatives also may be a part of the process of expressing the DNA patterns that we have in different forms for different people and in different occasions. It's so much more complex than we thought it was 10, 15 years ago.
All right, so it's alien intervention if necessary, but not necessarily alien intervention. Let's say hi to Anna, who is in El Paso, Texas. Good morning, Anna. Welcome aboard.
Good morning, Richard. Zyrit, is this correct? Am I saying it right?
And, that's close enough.
Okay. No,
I'll take it.
Right.
I'll take it. That's all right. Say hello and good morning to Paul Von Ward.
Paul Von Ward, thank you so much for this valuable information and my mental preparation. it's been very, very liberating. And of course, Richard, thank you so much for this excellent show, this program. It's just amazing. I had a question, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea what their game plan is by making us live at the most 120 years old, as you were saying, knowing that we congest today, what we congest today will not prolong our lives, you know? And if we do live longer, will we mutate differently? Is this about the survival of the fittest? Is this their test? And if so, then if we have to live again, which we'll forget our memories, they'll vanish, you know? I'm just wondering how that all fits into the puzzle. And then, of course, your giants, too, that they were here, because I've seen them in Peru. I don't know if you've been to Peru. And
yes, I saw them,
okay.
Too, yes.
Did you see those big old stone chairs and the landing zone?
Yes, we have much evidence for these giants, that's for sure.
They existed. I mean, something so huge. I mean, it's just incredible. It's hard to digest that
All right.
they lived here. You know?
Anna,
anyway.
you asked a whole pile of great questions, so let's see if Paul can knock those out of the park.
Well, I'm not sure that I can do that. I think that this notion of lengths of lifetime, one thesis might be that as we progress in terms of our genetic interaction with experience, with consciousness, we might be increasing the rate of evolution, and as we get faster in our change and our possibility of developing both mentally and physically, we don't need to live as long. In other words, you have a shorter lifetime, but during that lifetime, you have much more complexity in terms of evolution, also in terms of learning and developing our insight about the universe in which we live. And we don't have to be around as long as we used to have to live to learn a certain amount of knowledge.
And what of Anna's question, which is sort of the big alien agenda question? You know, why did they seed us?
Well, I don't know. Obviously, there are two theories. One is that they have taken advantage of us for their own experimentation and trying out different models of various physical features and so on. So we would be sort of the guinea pigs in that situation. On the other hand, another theory is that they were positively encouraging humans to have a much more complex and creative period of lifetimes. And so I don't think we can declare whether it was positive, negative, for their benefit or for our benefit. I suspect it's just a process of learning. I have this concept of a self-learning, self-actualizing universe. And all of our species, we humans, hybrid humans and aliens are all in a process of evolving to achieve our potential and add to the development of the whole universe. That's a model that I think I would like to think is probably the most you know, reasonable one, that we all of us are growing, learning, and experimenting with ourselves, and also experimenting with our environment, as we have been doing for centuries now. I think we might be experimenting negatively at this point in time, but you know, that's part of the universal process of evolution.
So let me throw this out there, Paul. Then, in order for us lowly Homo sapiens to join the cosmic community, we were in dire need of a software upgrade, and that's where the advanced beings came in.
Well, I think that is a possibility. I think that we did have assistance from more advanced beings to help us, and for also from their perspective, learning as well. You know, we're interconnected in both dimensions and in physical locations, and I think the whole process is to test our potential, and we're in the process of that on this planet and our current species.
All right, let's head on over to the east of the Rockies line and welcome Pat from Omaha, Nebraska to Coast AM. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Richard. Very interesting show. Thank you for taking my call. And Paul, yes, a wonderful subject matter. I was curious, Paul, if you thought it was possible that the sudden decrease in the lifespan of human beings was significantly affected by a supernova explosion, which happened approximately 30 to 50,000 years ago, so light years away, of course, but certainly cosmic radiation could have decreased the lifespan of humans, which would coincide with the biblical narrative, if Noah lived 60,000 years ago, which, according to the Genographic Project, the most comprehensive genetic study of the human race ever accomplished, the DNA of the entire human race stops at one man who lived in East Africa 60,000 years ago, when the human race almost went totally extinct. And if you want to talk about subject scientific matter, scientific information, which is being suppressed, I think you could add this, the Genographic Project, to evidence that giants existed, because very few people know the results of the Genographic Project, which is very, very incredible.
And that's why Coast to Coast listeners are the greatest listeners in the world. Great call, Pat.
Yes. Yes, I don't have a specific response to that. I think that what we have at this point in time is several narratives. You know, we don't have the whole picture of our physical history, our genetic history, our narrative history. So we're still playing with pieces of this puzzle, and what I'm trying to do is to offer some examples of how we can use inferences from what we know now about the way genetics work, and then taking that back in history to try to see if we can get a more complete picture. And I would hesitate to say that any particular project has got that whole picture at this point in time.
All right, let's keep on keeping on. We'll go west of the Rockies and say hi to Steve in Los Angeles. Hello, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning, Richard. Good morning, Paul. Very interesting topic tonight. And in somewhere you had mentioned the Sumerians, and I'm reading that book. I've been studying it for a while. It's The Earth Chronicles by a guy named Zachariah Sitchin. And that book, man, is eye-opening. And all roads lead to Sumer. And, you know, if a story, if I tell you a story, Paul, and then you tell the story to Richard, and then Richard tells it to somebody else, it's going to become a different story. And the stories that are told in all the cultures about these are, it's become mythology. You know, it all goes back to the oldest writings ever found, which was, I don't know, four or five cities down, you know, because they built cities on top of each other in the Near East. And these writings are the cuneiform tablets that Zachariah Sitchin worked on, and they tell the story of so much of what you're talking about. And, you know, the story of Noah, this planet of the crossing that comes around every so often, which is also in many cultures' history, it was coming around this one time, and they realized that it was going to cause a huge flood. And so the gods, they called them, you know, the Sumerians called them the gods. They voted to let mankind die. And it was mainly because the head god said we were noisy. And, you know, there's no arguing that. We are a noisy people. And so one of the gods snuck over and told Noah to build an ark to save mankind. And, you know, Mount Ararat was like the main beacon for the spaceport and everything else out there, their first base camp when they came here to mine for gold. I mean, it explains so much stuff. We have this unusual lust for gold. I don't know if you ever had gold fever. If you haven't, it's only because you've never looked for it.
Yeah.
And the need for a God. You know, I don't need to believe in God, but if I pray every day and I do the things that people that believe in God do, I'm happier. If I'm of service to others, I'm happier. You know, that's like in our DNA.
All right. I guess the reference to gold is the suggestion that we were created as a slave species to mine gold for this race of ETs, the Anunnaki. Anyway, Paul, jump in and add your two cents here.
Yeah, I think that Zachariah Sitchin did a great achievement for us to have a whole array of these stories. But they're not the only ones on planet Earth, and we have actually older ones. You go back in the Egyptian history, and you go back to from the records of the priest of Egypt talking about Atlantis, which of course was a much earlier civilization that involved both humans on planet Earth and their powerful gods from the skies who were mingled with humans at that time. So we have several narratives, and I think we need to just sort of put them all together the best we can at this point.
Indeed. Paul Von Ward, listen, I appreciate your time. I've enjoyed these last 2 hours with you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Paul Von Ward, We Are the Aliens, back with Micah Hanks talking giants when Coast to Coast AM continues. My name is Richard Serrett.